This podcast is from the Rand Corporation, a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis. For more Rand analysis, reports, and commentary on issues at the forefront of today's policy debate, visit www.rand.org.
Good afternoon. Let me begin before we start by thanking Congressman Cedric Richmond of Louisiana's 2nd District for sponsoring our room here today. We're very grateful for his help and that of his fantastic staff. And on that note, I'm pleased to introduce Zach Butterworth, the Congressman's General Counsel, to say a few words before we begin.
On behalf of the Congressman, I'd just like to say thank you guys for all the important work you've done in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast area. I know after Katrina, the Congressman really saw the importance of nonprofits and NGOs and disaster response and in the long-term disaster recovery. And he also wanted me to let you guys know to, you know, use our office as a resource. Our doors are always open. And any issues you have and anything you guys think we should know about, please feel free.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Zach. Welcome to this RAND Congressional Briefing. I'm Wynn Burkle, and I head up the RAND Corporation's Office of Congressional Relations here in Washington, D.C. Let me tell you briefly about RAND. The RAND Corporation is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis. RAND focuses on the issues that matter most, such as health, education, national security, international affairs, law and business, the environment, and more. As a nonpartisan organization, RAND operates independent of political and commercial pressures. We serve the public interest by helping lawmakers reach informed decisions on the nation's most pressing challenges. So RAND disseminates its findings and recommendations as widely as possible to benefit the public good. More than 10,000 RAND reports and commentary are available online at the same place at www.rand.org. The work that you'll see briefed here today was done under the auspices of the RAND Gulf States Policy Institute. Sally Sleeper, are you here? Sally, stand up for a moment. Sally Sleeper is the director of that institute. If any of you have questions afterwards, you can see Sally. Thank you. Today you will hear from a variety of panelists, including Joy Acosta of RAND Corporation, who will brief you on some of RAND's work regarding NGOs and their role in community resilience. In particular, Joy will talk to you about RAND's recommendations to strengthen community resilience by better involving NGOs, non-governmental organizations, in the process of preparing for disasters, responding to disasters, and recovering from their catastrophic effects. I should note that RAND does have a larger body of work about community resilience that won't be briefed here today, but which can be found free on our website, www.rand.org. We also want to thank the Allstate Foundation for its sponsorship of the conference upon which this report is based and for the report itself. So finally, on that note, let me introduce Jan Epstein. Jan Epstein is the executive director of the Allstate Foundation, which funded the research to explore the role of NGOs in disaster response and recovery. The Allstate Foundation helps prepare and protect communities from life's uncertainties, including catastrophes. A particular focus of Jan's work is leading the Allstate Foundation's ongoing efforts to help New Orleans recover from Hurricane Katrina. She works closely with a broad range of local nonprofits to help individuals and families rebuild their lives. With that, let me turn it over to Jan Epstein to introduce you to the briefing and the panelists you'll be hearing from today. Jan?
Thank you, Wynn, and thank you all so much for being here today. I really need to thank some key folks for making all of this great work happen. First of all, Sally Sleeper of RAND and her team have just been amazing partners in being thoughtful and very smart in the approach that we've taken toward the inclusion of NGOs in this work. Also, I'd like to thank Ann Williamson. Ann Silverberg Williamson of LANO has been an amazing partner, really a very smart, very thoughtful leader with a great vision for what the nonprofit sector in Louisiana can really look like. And finally, Admiral Allen, you honor us with your presence. Thank you so much for being here. I want to quickly tell you a little something about the Allstate Foundation and why we're involved with this work. The Allstate Foundation is an independent nonprofit. It's funded by the Allstate Corporation. And three focus areas actually guide our work: safe and vital communities, tolerance, inclusion, and diversity, and economic empowerment. We look for opportunities to match Allstate skills and resources with social issues, and as you might expect, catastrophe response is an area Allstate has much experience. We've seen significant devastation from disaster and how communities respond and recover. Our experience has shown us that despite the hardships faced by people in a community, Non-governmental organizations, NGOs, never give up. They look ahead to the future and band together to rebuild and revitalize a community after a disaster. There's unrealized potential to engage them more efficiently in disaster planning, response, and recovery. Through a strong partnership with LANO, the Louisiana Association of Nonprofits, we've really begun an important dialogue, and our talk today is really the continuation of that work. Today you'll hear some valuable policy recommendations that we hope will improve the integration and engagement of NGOs in building community resilience to disasters. Allstate remains a committed partner to the NGO community. For us, community involvement begins at home, where we live and work. And just as importantly, in the future we all share. So now I'd like to introduce the panelists for today's briefing. First, Joy Acosta, a community and cultural psychologist with the RAND Corporation, will be presenting some findings from the conference that the Allstate Foundation sponsored. Joy will be followed by Ann Silverberg-Williamson, the president and CEO of LANO, who will provide the local perspective, sharing her experiences working with nonprofit organizations that have dealt with technological and natural disasters. And finally, we're honored that Admiral Thad Allen will provide a national perspective, sharing the lessons he's learned in his four decades of service. So thank you again, and Joy.
Thank you, Jan. Hello, my name is Joy Acosta, and I specialize in community-based and participatory research that really focuses on behavioral health impacts of disaster, community resilience, and long-term recovery. Today, I'll be talking with you a little bit about what we have learned from engaging a broad array of NGOs over the past year about how governments can leverage the strengths of NGOs in disaster preparedness, response, and recovery. My presentation will focus in primarily in three areas. The first will be on the challenges that NGOs face in becoming fully integrated and engaged in disaster preparedness, response, and recovery. The second, I'll focus on some policy recommendations to address these challenges. And third, ways for putting these recommendations into action. Past disaster experiences have really shown us that non-governmental organizations' knowledge of the needs and the assets in their communities, their continued local presence, and their access to broad and diverse populations makes them an integral part of building local communities' resilience to disasters. What I mean by disaster resilience really is the ongoing and developing capacity of communities to account for their vulnerabilities and develop the capabilities to withstand, prevent, and mitigate the stress of disasters, to recover from disaster to at least the same level of health and social functioning, and to use knowledge or lessons learned from past disasters to really strengthen the community's ability to withstand the next disaster. NGOs further enhance response and recovery by providing key resources, for example, volunteers and staff to manpower response, as well as offering networks that can be used to push information out and receive referrals in. They also provide financial support through donations, as well as direct services, such as case management and counseling, that are often funded through the government. National strategies, really over the past year, including the National Security Strategy, the National Health Security Strategy, and the draft National Disaster Recovery Framework, have really emphasized a need to rethink how governments and NGOs partner. Together, they provide an unprecedented call for action in support of non-governmental organizations. However, these strategies lack specificity about how to implement them. In particular, these strategies suffer from a number of practical limitations that prevent NGOs from really being able to maximize their involvement across the four phases of disaster, from preparedness to response to immediate recovery to long-term recovery. And NGOs' full involvement across all four phases of disaster is critical because it serves as the cornerstone of community resilience. Next, I'm going to share a little bit with you about some of the specific challenges that NGOs face in order to put our policy recommendations into context. And information about these challenges was identified through some preliminary work that RAND has done in this area. First, There are still questions about what roles and requirements are for NGOs that they should follow to develop emergency plans. There is no comprehensive guidance about what health, behavioral health, and social services that NGOs should provide. Second, there are no pre-incident criteria or assessment procedures that help to really identify which NGOs should assume leadership roles. Identifying NGOs during the preparedness phase really helps ensure that NGO partners have the appropriate surge capacity and have the ability to utilize resources both efficiently and effectively. During response and recovery, NGOs face challenges because federal policy does not adequately support financial mechanisms that are suitable for NGOs. The Stafford Act, for example, which determines the type of assistance from the federal government during a major disaster, does not explicitly list case management or other direct services that NGOs provide as eligible expenses. In addition, there are no existing contract mechanisms for NGOs, and funding for services is often done through reimbursements rather than upfront funding mechanisms, making it difficult for non-governmental organizations that typically don't operate with a large amount of liquid assets. During response and recovery, NGO networks are also faced challenges trying to really balance the speed and the flexibility that is the hallmark of their response with coordination. Lack of a consistent or standardized way to communicate makes it very hard for NGOs to distribute resources without unnecessary duplication. And finally, it's unclear what role NGOs should assume during the transition between response and recovery, and when in the disaster cycle NGOs should take the lead in delivering what kinds of services. To address some of these challenges, RAND hosted three sessions at the Louisiana Association of Nonprofit Organizations annual conference. Each session began with a short presentation that summarized the challenges that NGOs face in building disaster resilience and was followed by a panel and attendee discussions to generate policy recommendations. Attendees ranged from between 40 to 60 at each session and included local, regional and national nonprofits, such as social service providers, schools, faith-based organizations, volunteer agencies, private businesses, and for-profit institutions were also in attendance. A policy agenda with six recommendations to improve NGO involvement in disaster resilience was generated from these sessions. The next couple of slides, I'll lead you through each of the six recommendations. The first recommendation was to more clearly articulate the roles and responsibilities for NGOs. This could happen through more concrete planning templates that really specify the type of staffing and the type of resources that are needed to better integrate health, behavioral health, and social services that NGOs provide into disaster response and recovery. Revisions to the Stafford Act are also needed that clearly outline the direct services that NGOs will be reimbursed for. The second recommendation was to improve information exchange both among NGOs and between NGOs and other entities, such as local and state government. And this could happen through a single point of entry system that people affected by disaster could utilize to receive services. This system could increase access to services through a national 211, which is basically a telephone service to assess the needs and connect local families to local providers. The system could also improve both coordination and tracking of services through a shared electronic database with client information. This tracking is especially important when dealing with the out and the in migration and displaced populations. The third recommendation is to provide better guidance about how to allocate resources for NGOs. NGOs need an upfront funding mechanism that clearly outlines which disaster response and recovery services are eligible for reimbursement by the federal government and at what rates. To help the government and NGOs appropriately estimate the costs that NGOs incur by providing these services, a national standard is needed. NGOs could also use this national standard when appealing to donors. And a pre-qualification process could be instituted to specifically vet NGOs that want to deliver services, and it could be used to generate pre-existing contracts for service delivery. Given the current economic climate, areas for dual benefit to both disaster planning and daily operations should be given careful consideration. What NGOs do in the day-to-day will influence how they react during disaster. So, for example, developing strong partnerships among NGOs and between NGOs and government to improve the coordination of routine social services could result in a better coordinated services during a disaster. To date, there's been little guidance and limited amount of tools to assist NGOs with really strategically planning how to integrate preparedness into daily operations. The fifth recommendation is to increase community capacity to deliver services. To really develop and strengthen a national disaster system, policy must define the services that should be offered by NGOs. For example, medical, social services, employment, health. And it must consider what supports are really needed to build the community's capacity to deliver seamless, evidence-based, and culturally appropriate services through NGO partnerships. And finally, implementation of these policy recommendations must be accompanied by research and evaluation to determine how feasible the recommendations are, how best to put them into action, and what really are the costs and benefits for greater NGO involvement. Ongoing exchange of research and evaluation is needed to develop best practices in this area and to ensure that these best practices become a part of routine practice. A concerted effort across multiple levels of government is needed to really put the policy agenda into action. However, today I'll offer several suggestions for where federal legislation could be improved. First, although there have been a number of proposed revisions to the Stafford Act, they have not passed Congress. Policymakers must remain vigilant in their efforts to more clearly articulate what is the service eligibility and financing for NGOs. Second, the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act, which is currently being considered by Congress, should clearly articulate roles and responsibilities for NGOs. And finally, all frameworks that deal with disaster response and recovery, for example, the National Response Framework, should have clear roles and transition points for when and where NGOs should assume leadership. Implementing this national policy agenda will help the U.S. be better equipped to leverage the strengths of NGOs to enhance and reduce the length of recovery and improve community resilience to disasters. Thank you. I would like to turn it over now to Ann Williamson. She's the Director and Chief Executive Officer of LANO, and she'll be describing the local experience of nonprofits.
Thank you, Joy, and good afternoon to everyone. Thank you very much for your time and attention, as well as my gratitude to our partners. Indeed, partnership and preparedness is the epitome of describing the state-based nonprofit experience through 2005 until just last year in 2010. As you may imagine, we daily are reminded of the importance of the interdependency between government and non-governmental organizations. The nonprofit community is the trusted community within the state of Louisiana relative to being identified by its citizenry as committed not only to community resiliency in advance of a disaster, but there's the confidence that nonprofits will remain hand in hand with their community throughout the response and will be there for the long term. And it is that trusted identity of the nonprofit sector that we're interested in assuring government leverages in times of disaster response. Certainly, we are all struck by the current experiences of Japan at this time and realizing that as their citizenry is so faced with many of the sufferings that our citizenry in Louisiana has recently known, that what immediately strikes us is their ability to have prepared, exercised, and drilled, and certainly could not have anticipated the challenges that they're currently facing. But it is just those practices and those formations of partnerships and relationships that have allowed them to have the responsiveness that they have had today. The cycle of partnerships comes from cultivating trust, And trust is cultivated through practice. And practice and drilling allows us to have quick and smart action in response to disasters where time is so precious. The time of a disaster is not when you want to be expending precious energy and resources into forming new relationships. And that's why partnerships between non-governmental organizations and governmental organizations is so critical to establish outside of the disaster context. Examples of 2005 certainly illustrate why coordination, communication, and financing are such necessary elements to our preparedness as a nation. Certainly, the influx of volunteers and donated goods that we had in Louisiana in 2005 were of an enormous proportion that had not been anticipated, and there was no existing vehicle through which these kinds of donated goods and services and time could immediately be included into the government response. And so that's an example of the kind of gap that the lack of advanced coordination demonstrated for us. Certainly with the mass sheltering and evacuation, the care for our children and families, we know that this is the exact kind of mission that day-to-day nonprofits are advancing all across our country, perhaps not in the scale of a mass evacuation, but addressing homelessness, addressing hunger, addressing family separation. These are the day-to-day missions of nonprofits, so we must consider how to efficiently and effectively leverage this expertise in times of disaster. Communication is so essential to effective NGO inclusion. For example, in South Louisiana, you can imagine the fabric is so defined by culture and arts community. And the nonprofit sector and the culture and arts community is pivotal to the greater New Orleans area's identity. And yet we saw that that was a void that had not been considered in the responsiveness of rebuilding the community and bringing our citizenry back. We needed to consider the inclusion of the arts and culture nonprofit community as well. And then finally, the reason why financing is so critical to be considered when we think about this partnership between government and non-governmental agencies, again, another example is how important childcare was to assuring that we could bring back our workforce. And for employees to go back to work, they need childcare. Well, for childcare to be reestablished, certainly there were federal government financial assistance for the care itself, but we hadn't thought about the need to house the childcare the staff of the childcare centers. So without the employees of the childcare centers, the childcare couldn't be offered, even though there was federal assistance for the service. That's an example of a gap in the financing where the nonprofit community was at a loss to consider how to literally house the child care staff. So I share these with you to let you know that obviously Louisiana has been impacted not only because of the nonprofit community's ability to respond in such deep end crisis, but also now five years later to look back and impart to the rest of our country and our world, we hope, these vital lessons in terms of shaping public policy. Certainly, neither people nor communities come in parts, and therefore our policy solutions to assure that we are reestablishing our citizenry and building our communities to come back even stronger must also be considered in the totality of the recommendations that RAND has provided for us. And so now I have the pleasure of inviting us all to hear from RAND Senior Fellow Admiral Thad Allen.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here today. He slipped in the room and left before anybody noticed, but Representative Howard Coble was here. Note that for the record, and we appreciate his support. I'm here to make a couple of comments, but I have to tell you at the start, there is a convergence of the findings of the work of RAND and their work with NGOs and the issues that have been identified by the NGOs and my actual field experience coordinating the response to Hurricane Katrina and the oil spill. I believe that we are writing a new social contract in this country about what the public expects of their government and what a whole-of-government response means. And a whole-of-government response is not just an agency acting within its authority's jurisdiction and the appropriations bounds that's been established. It is the ability to integrate the entire community together and bring all those forces and resources to bear on a particular problem. I also believe that the public's perception of the effectiveness of government is measured very, very greatly in how well NGOs and local population are integrated into that response, including like using local contractors, getting the private sector involved, and so forth. I think this is critically important work. I have spoken about this issue many, many times since 2005 and have started discussion again following our work with the oil spill. We have people with resources, passion, and commitment. We also have ways where they can become involved in these responses. And in many ways, there's no barriers to entry if you're talking about the social media or the internet. And there needs to be a way, an aperture, if you will, to bring these resources to bear on a response. And it needs to be included in the overall doctrinal structure of how we conduct what we call the National Incident Command System. There needs to be representation not only of NGOs but the private sector. Anybody that has a resource can be brought to bear to achieve an effect in a disaster needs to be included. The public expects it. I think it's part of a new social contract moving forward. Anywhere from handling issues with animals in New Orleans after the hurricane to social services, behavioral health after the oil spill, these are things that are not clearly delineated in law and statute, but they are part of the safety net that's required that NGOs fill. They are there in the community. They know what the needs are. They're prepared to provide it. That needs to be facilitated, and right now there are barriers to that, most notably in the restrictions placed on how the funds are executed under the Stafford Act, and then the inability of certain agencies that are operating on behalf of the federal government to be constrained by their own authorization and appropriations. So I think it's entirely fitting that we open an area of inquiry and establish the role of NGOs, clearly identify the benefit that NGOs bring to these responses, and then the pathway by which we can bring the resources, passion, and commitment together to achieve what this country really expects the government to do in times of crisis. I've been with RAND since 1 October when I ended my response on the oil spill. I've looked at a lot of work that's been going on inside RAND, and there are certain affinities that I have found with my own experience in life and the experiences I've had working with disaster response, and this certainly is one of the more compelling bodies of work that's going on inside RAND now with our NGO partners. It's certainly one that I'm proud to be involved in, and we're delighted to be here today to inform you on the status of the research, the problems that remain, the mandate, if you will, to move ahead. And I think the argument is compelling, not only to solve some of these issues legislatively, but some of these require nothing more than administrative decisions on how we actually execute our response doctrine and inviting people into the command structure when we start planning and executing the responses moving forward. So I'm happy to be here today, and thank you very much for having all of us.
This presentation is provided as a public service by the RAND Corporation. Visit www.rand.org to learn more about these issues and to explore RAND's free online library of more than 10,000 policy reports and commentaries.